Well, a story we talked about yesterday, a little boy of three claims that he saw his great-grandmother in heaven while he was clinically dead after falling into a pond. And apparently the great-grandmother is the one that told little Paul, go back, go back. So he did. Up next, Dr. Lori Ann Levin joins us. We'll talk about this, her latest work, God, the Universe, and Where I Fit In. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Lori Ann Levin is a doctor of clinical psychology, founder, CEO of Moonview Sanctuary in Santa Monica, California. A very rare combination of 25 years experience as well in the entertainment field, along with a number of years in the field of psychology. Here she is back on Coast to Coast. Hi, Lori, how are you?
Hi, George. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
This story that we had last night is so unbelievable. I wanted to get your reaction to it. This little boy says he saw his grandmother in heaven, and she told him, go back, Paul, go back. And so he did.
This is, yes, rare, but not rare. Yes, rare, because obviously it's being talked about and people are aware of it, and it's exciting to hear that this little boy was saved after hours of resuscitation. There are thousands of accounts, a lot from children. There was a book called Closer to the Light. People trust children. It is often that when they have a near-death experience, they are met by a grandparent, a personage of love, who comes and tells them that their time is not up. Much of this work was started 40 years ago. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, Ray Moody, Ken Ring, now Bruce Grayson, Sam Parnia. There are doctors who have done thousands and thousands of interviews. So this is an exquisite story of a miracle, but in so much as it is validated time and time again. The ancients knew it. The agrarian cultures that were closer to death knew it. This is something that's beautiful and wonderful that we're talking about.
Is it more proof that we need in order to convince those who don't believe?
Well, look at your past guest, you know, who thought it was precious accidents, mm-hmm. and feels that, you know, I, with all due respect, I am one who believes that all belief systems are valid, all expression is valid, but this would be contradictory to a lot of what he said in order for us to see that there is alternative life. Yes, there is dense physical life in a construction as we perceive it. But when a great-grandmother, Emmy, says to him, I want you to go back, it's not your time yet, in her words, you know, in his words were different than that. Yeah. His words were that there was a lot of light. I was floating. I came to a gate. I saw Grandma Emmy on the other side. She said to me, what are you doing here, Paul? You must go back to Mommy and Daddy. I will wait for you here. Much of those accounts are talked to in words that we know, much in studying people who are about to pass over. They're on their deathbed, and they're talking to family members that they haven't seen for years because they've crossed over. So are we in need of more proof? You have to, pardon my expression, tear into your own consciousness to be open to see light, that which is not necessarily tangible by all the five senses, but repeatedly shows up in our consciousness. So when you talk about going into a time machine and going into the past, if we study near-death experiences, the act of life review, which isn't often a part of a three-year-old's near-death experience, but many times with adults, they will, as their corporal body is lying on the earth, in their flesh expression, their soul or consciousness, for lack of a better word, will rise toward this light, which is another criteria. I know you've had Jeffrey Long, who has the latest book of the evidence of life after life, on your show. They'll go toward a light, and they will experience sometimes a life review where they go back to past events and relive them. So we do have, in respect to looking at the way people have dipped into the other side, in understanding that we are mutable and that our consciousness is outside of time.
Lori, this little boy, what's going to happen to him as he matures, as he grows up? Is he going to have more supernatural powers than most people?
The accounts for looking at these thousands and thousands and thousands of people is that they have often, you know, and this little boy might forget. And then, as with reincarnation stories, little children have vivid accounts. And by the time they get to 8, 10, 12 years of age, they may forget if the parents don't keep it alive in their consciousness. But with adults, we do know that they often come back with a clairvoyance, a renewed spirituality. Sometimes it is not rooted in religion. They often feel less attached to material gain and more attached to service and knowing that they have a purpose. They often have a connection to why it was exactly at that moment that that happened, and it is serves as a course correction. With this little boy, if one subscribes to the belief of soul group, he might have had this experience in service, not in a conscious way, but in a soul group way, in service to those around him, the mother, the father, the grandparents that were watching him. It may serve as a cohesion for that family.
All right, let's tear this case apart for a second, Lori, and then later on we'll take phone calls from concerned listeners and those who may want to share some of their own types of stories. The little boy is drowning. He's clinically dead. He falls into a pond. Doctors are trying to resuscitate him for hours. As you say, it's not successful. All of a sudden, his heart starts beating. So over this three-hour period, this boy is clinically dead. He's gone, and he's on the other side. He apparently sees this great-grandmother. Why does she come to him? Why doesn't some angel come to him? Maybe she was an angel. I don't know. But why does it always seem to be the loved one who comes?
The ancestral line is a line of protection, connection, and direction. It is, if one subscribes, which I do, that we are all connected, we are all one, and we are all pieces of universal God consciousness. That loved one is recognizable to him. He might have seen pictures to her of her. Often God, as I refer to it, shapeshifts to the person having the near-death experience. We have studied enough cultures that and enough religions that the universal consciousness that comes to guide that near-death experience is something that that person will receive easily. I, on the other hand, do believe that it was his great-grandmother. Often when I have worked with people as an intuitive and I am exposed to consciousness that's in the room that is not dense physical consciousness, a guide, an ancestor, an angel, a saint sometimes comes into the room. Often it is a grandparent who has not ever had life time with this child, but guides them from the other side. They're in a soul group where there is a service to better the family line, to better humanity, to better consciousness.
I understand that when you were on with me not too long ago, you had incredible response, Lori.
I did. Thank you. You changed my life, George Nouri. You changed my life. You changed my life.
At least I didn't have to do it from the other side, either one of us.
That's right. That's right. I think that people are yearning. They have a sense. They know that they are connected. They know that there is times where they have an 11th hour luck or a knowing that they're supposed to turn the corner and they don't know why. And it's a brush with fate that needed to happen, that things are beyond serendipity and beyond coincidence. So when one starts talking about near-death experiences like this, which is why it's so comforting to know that there really is no death, that this body is a vehicle for this moment to go through life lessons, but that we are bigger than this body. We can also study reincarnation, which is also exciting.
How can someone, though, look at this case, for example, just this little boy, and not come away with a belief that there's something else out there? How could they come back and say, well, that's not proof, or I don't believe it, or anything like that?
Well, there's numerous scientific and medical articles with the usefulness of temperature modulation and hypothermia, and it's designed to protect endangered cells and prevent tissue death. So you could muster up a scientific argument that because he fell into cold water, that, you know, there is a way to take this and make it into plausible science, which is what your friend Marcelo was doing. There is a way to construct plausible science, which is exciting. But if we go beyond what we can sense by the five senses and what we can define tangibly and go into these realms of interviewing these experiencers, people who have had abductions, people who have had visitations of UFOs, people who have had, you know, look at even science, genetics of a human being, there's 20,000 genes. The genetics of a grain of rice is 40,000 genes. Are we to say that we are more complicated life form because we have the ability to really change our environment? Or are there complicated life forms because they've lasted millions of years and have adapted through very difficult situations? You know, who is to say? You know, he's talking about the dinosaurs not building radios. What, in our study of dolphins, what is going on below the oceans, even though they may not be building radios? Are these not beautiful beings that are healers? And I could cite all the research with dolphins. I may be taking you away, but I'm trying to ask people to open up, try on the idea that we are so much bigger than our DNA.
Well, I've always believed dolphins are very special creatures. I'm not even sure they are earthbound. They may have come from some other place. Who knows? But if they had arms, God knows what they'd be able to do.
Even without arms, they're beautiful beings. You know, all the work they're doing with autistic children, and, you know, there's new advancements in their brains by swimming with the dolphins. It's just so much reversal of tumors. I mean, they're gorgeous beings. So, you know, we're limited maybe in the way that we perceive what they can do.
Well, you know what I found fascinating as well about this little boy's story is if the grandmother did indeed kind of force him to come back, it's almost as if they have reason on the other side, too. They know it's not time for this little three-year-old boy to die. He's not going to stay here. And it's my responsibility as his great-grandmother, as a connection of a soul, to get him back and convince him to go back. That's amazing all by itself.
Yes. Oftentimes, those people who go on the other side don't want to come back because they're outside of pain. They're outside of fear. It's described as all ecstasy, all joy, all knowing. They feel...
It's like being in a good dream. You don't want to wake up from it. Right?
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's another point. Who's to say that we're not alive and functioning on the dream plane? So this grandmother, as I agree with you, this was his grandmother, his guide. We have protection from our ancestral line and our family line, which may not be biological, to come in and get him back. And when the adults are questioned, they're usually told it's because you haven't finished learning how to love yet. It's about learning how to give and receive love. This is a school about love.
If he were 70 or 80 years old, is it possible that there would be nobody there to greet him and that he was supposed to die if he were that age?
If he were supposed to die, much the way we've researched with hospice nurses, with doctors who have been bedside to these patients, no, a rally comes. a rally comes. It's a lot of relatives that have passed that come bedside or, you know, death moment to help you cross over. So, it's usually a rally. And in this case, he remembers the grandmother, but we don't know what other consciousness was truly with him. And if, as I know you have and other people, when you've been in the room when a child is being birthed, or if you've been in the room when somebody is dying, that is a very mystical moment where the energy in that room is very different. It's time stops. It's beyond description. So you can almost feel all of that consciousness, or God, if you will, in the room.
It's truly a remarkable story. It's one of the most remarkable ones I've ever heard.
Because of the amount of hours that he was proclaimed dead. And then he bounces back into his body with no damage, no brain damage, no physical body damage. It's a wonderful, wonderful miracle.
What's new on your plate, Delori? What are you doing these days?
Well, I'm still on my book tour, and that's exciting.
Well, give us some cities, then.
Okay. Right now, I'm going to Salt Lake City. It's on my website, LoriAnnLevin.com.
L-E-V-I-N.
Right. And Lori with an I-E and Ann with no E. Salt Lake City, Baltimore, Maryland, L.A., Los Angeles, Pasadena. Those are the ones that are coming up most recently.
Okay, so you got your trips there. You got where, when, and where on your website, which we've got a link for you at coasttocoastam.com. That's good. And did you have fun when you wrote God, the Universe, and Where I Fit In?
I had a blast. It took me 16 years, which is hard to know that that was a blast, but it was inspired by my being bedside to my dying mother. When I saw that everything that I had studied and believed, and I had worked with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and Ken Ring, she was at the University of Chicago, he was at the University of Connecticut. Everything that I had studied was exactly the way it transpired in the room with my mother. She called out to those who were not in the room, home, home, take me home. You'll hear countless stories about the hospice nurses. And I knew that I had to go back, get my doctorate, and bring this work through. I had, as you said, years in entertainment. It was not what I had dreamed about, even though it's still in my blood and I will still do things from time to time. My objective was always psychology and healing. And this was a way for me to say, A, I'm an intuitive. I've been an intuitive since birth. Most doctors who do this research had a patient, a case. They became the researchers out of their skepticism. They didn't have an internal knowing. So I wanted to be a voice of saying, this is accurate. Trust your instincts. You know, trust your instincts. When you finish somebody's sentences that you wouldn't have known where they were going, when your long-lost roommate that you haven't talked to for 25 years is on your voicemail and you've been thinking about them all day, when you get, you know, a shiver over you after you've said something, they're trying on the other side, or your God self is trying to punctuate, trying to connect you to that higher sense of self where you are plugged in all the time. So it's opening. It's just opening to staying awake to not what is just tangible.
Well, and it sounds like you're enjoying this too. You're having fun doing what you're doing.
Love what I'm doing, excited by what I'm doing. And the book is me explaining that my path, how I got there, how I opened up. And it is easy and it isn't easy. It's a belief, a trust, and to stay with it, because a lot of opening yourself up to that intuitive side is allowing the humor of the universe to help you grow. God writes straight with crooked lines.
All right. Well, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls with you next, Lori, on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, those of you in Houston listening to Coast on AM 740 KTRH, in about 2 hours, I think I'm going to be on the Laura and JP show for a bit. So just keep your radio on. You can't go to bed yet. We'll be back in a moment. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, it's Who's Behind the Secret Door? My producers have come up with some secret guests who will be popping into the program, and I've got to figure out who they are. So that'll be one of our classic coast-to-coast shows, Who's Behind the Secret Door? Up next, we'll take phone calls with our special guest, Dr. Lorianne Levin, on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we've got a lot of calls and not a lot of time, so we'll go right to the calls with Dr. Lorianne Levin. We'll go to you, Mike, first of all, in Georgia. Go ahead, Mike. You're up with us.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi,
good,
Mike.
Michael.
Great. Good to talk to you, Lori. It's complicated to get through to y'all, but it's awesome to be here. I don't mean to pull away from the question or, you know, the statement of the afterlife. That young boy, he apparently saw his grandma. My personal opinion, and not to try to insult anybody, is that any belief in an afterlife, to me, is comfort for the living. I think we're in a situation now where the planet is extremely overpopulated and people are not living in tune with nature. Have any of you ever heard of the Georgia Stonehenge?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, and some of the rules, and I don't think they know the artist who created that.
Or the people who came up with the money to get it up there.
Right, and it's kind of a mystery. But what it states is that we have to live in harmony with nature and that there's too many people. And scary to think about, and I just want to throw this out there. It could be a possibility. The building of the space station as kind of a panic room, you know, for an annihilation of the population.
Right, or some radiation burst or something like that.
Well, you know, earlier they were talking about an antimatter bomb, something that's a different show and whatever. But to find a way to where, and to me it's a good idea because of the fact that every problem, and I'm sure people have studied this, is based on the fact that we're extremely overpopulated and it's straining us and the world cannot sustain it. Scientists know it. Everyone knows it.
But why don't you believe in the afterlife because of that?
The afterlife, to me, I can't say for sure. I don't know. It seems like it would be comfort for the living. It seems like something that was created by people on Earth, an Earth knowledge.
Okay, well, let's ask Dr. Lori this. Do you think for a moment that it was created to comfort the living? That people
I think
this up.
Mike has a valid belief system that is real for him and it needs to be honored, just as I'm asking him to honor mine, that there is room for both to coexist, and that for a long time I did question until it kept coming up for me and for my colleagues, and yes, you can build arguments and surround yourself with the people that will support your belief system. And you also, in the act of having that belief at a quantum level, create it and attract that which supports it. So I want you to know that I have great respect for you feeling that the afterlife is comfort for the living. Those people who've had experiences, it's reality to them. And it is very real and holds great weight for their life and has restructured their life if they've had a near-death experience, a spiritual experience, an out-of-body experience, or they have bilocated or able to remote view. There are questions on the table for those who need to expand their knowledge base. And so I am not familiar with the panic room for the radiation burst. Yes, I understand that we are overpopulated, but I do feel that there is a divine order that I rely on and trust, much the way if we look into statistics deep enough and you get a large enough population of measuring the redwoods of the earth, it's a perfect bell curve. Or if you measure how many redheads exist in the planet, it's a perfect bell curve, that the overpopulation will, in fact, be in some way an ordered design that we will have knowledge in how to handle.
Very good. Next up, we go to Tom in Port Angeles, Washington. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Marianne? Is that what it is?
Lori.
Lori.
Sorry. Have you heard of Ekinkar?
Yes, I've heard of it. And there's
okay.
a center that exists near my house, but I don't know of it.
Well, I started out as a scientific agnostic, and then in college I had a spontaneous out-of-body experience, and then I read a book, Journeys Out of the Body by Robert Monroe, and that explained exactly what happened to me, and I was like, whoa, dude, it's like this happened to me first, and then I read about it. I had no idea that anything like this was possible. It totally transformed my life. And then later on, an Ekinkar book found me. And it was at that time called The Ancient Science of Soul Travel. Now it's evolved into a religion called, kind of a religion, I guess it's universal though, called the Light and Sound of God. The religion of light and sound of God, where you meditate and you get the light and the sound,
mm-hmm.
and then you travel into higher planes, and there's Ekmasters to help you travel through these higher planes. And then I, you know, I was reading about this, and it's like I had this dream that was like, okay, I really wanted to be an Ekist. That's what we, you know, call ourselves if you're an Ekinkar. And I was like, I really want to be an Ekist, man. And I was like, went to sleep thinking that. And then in my dream, I was like walking through this really seedy part of town. It was like all these bars and really down-run places. And there's all these garish orange signs and stuff. And then I like saw it and looked up, and I was like, I was thinking, man, I really want to be an Ekist. And there's this blue, beautiful blue sign said X Center, and I wow, this is cool. And so I walked into this bar. I thought it was a bar, and yeah, it turned out to be a bar. A bunch of college kids like me were out there, you know, partying and having fun. And it's like, this is not really what I was looking for. And then I went through these chintz curtains, and there was this guy that looked like Gandalf, a wizard. And
what's your point here, Tommy? What's your point on this?
Oh, my point is that in my dream experience, after I had the dream experience, that later on in the book that I was reading at the time, it told me about the first initiation into Ekinkar. And the first initiation usually takes place in the dream state.
Wow.
And
a lot of things happen in the dream state.
So you manifested it in that you put it out there that you wanted it and your prayer was answered. And you did it on the dream state, which you didn't even know was the first initiation. So great for you. That's wonderful. George?
Well, by the way, I've heard Port Angeles, and then I've heard Port Angeles. I think most people call it Port Angeles. Like Los Angeles, as a matter of fact. Tom, thanks for that dream. Let's go to another Tom. This one's in Florida. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Yep. Welcome to the show, Tom. Go ahead.
Very interesting conversations you're having this evening.
Oh, yeah.
I think
the whole night.
That death is overrated. What are you laughing about?
Death is overrated because we don't die. Keep going, Tom.
My thinking is, or my wonder, is that all through our life, from the day that we're born, the ultimate horror is death, dying. We
yep.
hear it all the time. And then when we do travel and we pass over and we do expire our physical bodies, the consciousness, and George, you've had some wonderful guests that have expressed some thinking about dimensions and where are we at this particular point in time and place.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, how do we living in this realm express ourselves knowledgeable to expand it to the next.
Express ourselves knowledge. How do we, living in this realm, express, say it one more time.
Well, express ourselves, let's say, to prepare ourselves for the next trip.
Oh, prepare. Okay. That's a beautiful question. I love that question. Let me share with you how we can look at those who have flatlined or dipped into the other side and how we can learn from that. And that's exactly what my book is about and what my work is about. So thank you, Tom. When we look at life review, you don't only live it through what you remember, but you live it through the other person who is interfacing with you in that moment of either deep regret, deep sorrow, guilt, remorse, and great joy. And when you relive it, you see the mutuality of that exchange so that you can come into resolution and self-love. You forgive it because you see the benefit or the ripple effect that it had on the many around you. You don't hold yourself in a guilt position or a remorse position. So what we can learn and how you can prepare is why wait for us to have to go on the other side, go to school, have these life review sessions, and work on ourselves towards self-love. The act of knowing what happens to these people when they die is to bring it into the here and now. We need to start loving ourselves. Really look at each situation where we're holding ourselves in a position of emotional blackmail and look at them and see if we cannot go to a higher ground and see if we cannot forgive ourselves, make amends to those, even if we can't speak to them directly on the etheric, use prayer to say, you know, I'm sorry, or look at just the exquisite exchange and what you learned from it. So even if we had a difficult parent, an abusive parent that we haven't shook the anger from, look at indirectly what they've given you by all the attributes that you love about yourself. Even though they may not have taught you directly, they've informed some of the best aspects of you by that abuse.
You know, Lori, I was thinking today, of all days, of the Rat Pack, in the fact that all of them, other than Shirley MacLaine, who was their honorary Rat Pack member,
yes,
they're all dead. Joey Bishop's dead. Peter Lawford's dead. Sammy Davis Jr. is dead. Dean Martin's dead. Frank Sinatra. They're all dead. This is something that we can't escape. And I was thinking when I first started doing Coast to Coast on a full-time basis back in 2003, sometime around October, November, CNN ran a crawl across the screen that said, you know, I'm going to be doing Coast to Coast. And sure enough, I'm telling you, one day when I leave this planet physically, they're going to run another crawl that says, I'm gone. We can't escape this at all. How do people prepare then for this inevitable trip emotionally? Because it's going to happen to everybody.
Well, all right, so you're talking to me, who wrote this book about her mother's death. At bedside to my mother's death, she was an agnostic. I asked her, please, if you can get to the other side and communicate with me, you will. She said, I will. To this day, my mother communicates with me. I don't believe that you're trying to escape the inevitable. I believe that you're opening yourself up to those around you to say, I may not die. I may change form. I might live in the etheric and in the subtle realms, but I will be with you. I trust and ask. I know that I've asked you about your aunt, and you said mm-hmm. you've only felt her maybe once or twice, not
right.
really. But that leave open the possibility and invite it in, because the other side, that which you now can know does not die, has to be invited in. They will not disturb your belief systems. They will not disturb your purpose. And if your purpose is to be a hardcore scientist or to be an agnostic or to be a skeptic, they will not disturb that. But if you say, I am open to the possibility that you do exist, I invite it in, You can come to me on the dream plane. You can come to me through visions. You can come to me through body knowings. Allow it. I think that that's how to prepare people, to say, just stay open. Invite it in. If it doesn't exist, it won't show up. But try to say, please, if you exist out there, you know, my guide, my guidance, my universal energies, Mother Nature, whatever is in comfort to what you hold as holy in your belief system, invite it in.
Grab a call from Brenda, New Mexico. Hey, Brenda, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
All is well.
Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said all is well. Go ahead.
Yes. It is true that when the older people leave, that the spirits do come talk to them. My ex-grandmother-in-law loved her because she could drive my ex-mother-in-law crazy, lived to 100 years old. And when the spirits came to get her, which, you know, by that time, they'd definitely been gone for a while, I caught on to the family breaking down. I asked what happened because they were from Pakistan. They only spoke she only spoke their language. But she had all these spirits coming for her. So they all broke down crying, which, yes, I believe that definitely helped her to pass. But it also definitely showed the family that it was her time to go. You know, sometimes you still want to hold a grip. But it was,
and did you say she was 200 years old?
She was 100.
Okay, I was going to say 200 would have put her way into the Guinness Book of World Records for a long, long time.
I know there's other people longer. But, yes, the spirits did come talk to her. And so they know they've been gone for a long time after being at that age. So they were all broken down, which definitely let them know that it was her time to go as well.
Yes. Brenda, I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
No, go ahead.
You bring up a very good point. You know, there is bystander spiritual, mystical experiences that come to being bedside with those who are dying, that they didn't count on, even if they were agnostic or atheist. They come away with a knowing that there was something greater in the room and that they saw something that defied their belief system. There is also a phenomenon that you're not talking about, but you did hint to, that when one is ill for a long time and they are sleeping and going in and out, their consciousness is mutable, much the way we've heard about many accounts where people have been ritually abused and their consciousness can leave their body to get out of the pain.
To escape. Yeah.
Yes. So much like remote viewing or bilocation, we can have parts of our consciousness take flight. She might have been knitting herself into the subtle. Oftentimes they're trying on going into the death state, which is a mediation.
Well, I got to tell you, Lori, it is a wonderful thing to at least believe deep inside that there is another side. Thanks for being on the show again tonight, Lori. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Jason King, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.